Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, as you may know, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. A caller says Irish troops have served with NATO, though not a member of NATO. If you could just give me a bit more information so I understand the when. No one to blame but this government. The public rejected rejected Nice and were made vote again, and that's why it's important, because some of those assurances were why people voted the way they did. When I read the news item about guards being given power to intercept phone data, it was said to be introduced in the wake of Graham Dwyer's successful case against the state in relation to how they used his cell location, etc., to secure his conviction for the murder of Elaine O'Hara. There was no reference to the Dublin riots in the news item I read. Personally, I've no problem with my location being available if legally required. It's important that Gardaí are given every tool to ensure murderers and rapists are brought to justice. Technology must be fully utilised. As you will know, it was modern technology which was used to organise the rioting last week. If you're not involved in crime, you've nothing to fear. And I've, on the record on this programme, a number of times saying, to be honest with you, I don't restrict any of my data usage with Google or whatever in terms of my location and all that kind of stuff. It's astonishing. If you give me a date and a time over the last 15 years, I can tell you precisely where I was going through the Google timeline. That's how close they track you. And I've no problem really with the guards having access to that information. I think really what I was flagging there is the interception of messages between people, because, you know, then they can be interpreted one way or another. And of course, if people are, if you're involved in crime, that's great to get to the bottom of that, but maybe you're not. But your messages could be interpreted in a particular way. Morning, Greg. As regards to the case of a person getting a suspended sentence for child abuse images, I have not seen or heard anything about it. Well done to you for exposing it. Is it another cover-up? Thank you. No, it's quite possible that a court's reporting service maybe didn't send it out to everyone, or they chose not to use it. It was a man, he was found to be in possession of 276 videos of child abuse and was given a fully suspended sentence. Owen Prizeman, 35, uploaded images of extreme child abuse on his social media, featuring a video of a man assaulting a little boy, and I'm just changing a word there in case there's any younger ears listening. He pleaded guilty to possession of child abuse material at his home in Killinarden in Tallaght in August 2022. It was in the Irish Independent. They report that the videos ranged in length from a few seconds to over half an hour. The youngest victim depicted was a baby. The court heard that in this video, the baby boy was shown clearly distressed. I actually, it's so horrific, I really can't read it out. Judge Orla Crow said 90% of the child abuse material found in Prizeman's possession was of the most serious category of child pornography, with some depicting the sexual abuse of babies and infants. And that phraseology is changing. It's horrendous. It's not child pornography at all. It's child abuse. Passing sentence, Judge Melanie Greeley said that the videos in particular contained extreme content of children as young as 2 years, which included the most horrendous of crimes. However, after taking into account what she viewed as mitigating factors, the judge decided to hand down a fully suspended 16-month sentence. So, you know, when we're hearing of figures of people feeling they don't want to come forward historically as victims or survivors, however they personally want to frame it, it really is quite remarkable. Greg, judges need guidelines, especially for cases of child sexual abuse and emotional abuse, where many have little or no training in. Otherwise, how will they realise that many of these images of children being assaulted or abducted, or that psychological abuse like parental alienation can damage a child into adulthood or for life? Okay. Hi, Greg. It would fit government to put a stop to the amount of people coming into this country every week. We can't cope. Ireland has become a free-for-all. It depends. There's different people coming in for different reasons. Of course, you need to be more specific there, or maybe you don't. Whether Irish politicians and media want to face it or not, mass immigration is now the defining political issue of our time. It is now necessary for having a referendum on the EU migrant deal. Again, people think that all of a sudden, if they have a referendum, that it will go one way or other. But a lot of people would recognise the importance of people coming into this country to work in our nursing homes, in our hospitals, in hospitality. Are you saying that they're okay, but there's certain ones that you don't want to allow in? Or is it international? We take in less than 2% in Europe of international protection candidates, so we're quite low in the European standard. So what is he saying? When you say what you'd be voting on, what would you like to vote on? And how do you think that vote would go? And I'm speaking almost directly to that listener, but anyone can pick up and can pick up on that. All right, let's take a break for the bingo numbers. Our next guest, just around the corner. Now, around 14,000 women in Ireland suffer a miscarriage each year, which means effectively that one in five pregnancies ends in miscarriage here. And between one in four and one in six couples or individuals in Ireland encounter difficulty conceiving. But what does this mean in terms of work? So if a woman suffers a miscarriage, what is she entitled to in terms of a break from work, payment while she's on that break, how long, and what have you? Well, it's not really defined as such, but hopefully shall soon be. Senator Marie Sherlock of the Labour Party has a private member's bill going to the final stage in the Shannon today, and it's an amendment to the Organisation of Working Time Act, or the amendment to it. Good morning to you, Senator. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
Okay, so what are you proposing, Marie?
Look, Greg, as you set out there, that we know that there is, you know, almost 14,000 women who experience an early miscarriage in this country each year. One in six couples experience infertility treatment. And while these are in the main health issues, I also very much believe there are workplace issues, because certainly we know that there is both a psychological and a physical impact of going through both processes. And our call in particular is really for a flexible and accommodating work environment. So the reason we brought forward this legislation is actually on foot of the INTO, the Irish National Teachers Organization. They conducting work amongst their membership, which very much fed back to us that there was a huge call for some sort of workplace leave with regards to early miscarriage and fertility treatment. Because at the moment, you know, workers aren't sick, and they very much feel that they aren't sick if they're experiencing early miscarriage or going through fertility treatment. And yet there isn't that flexibility. And for anybody who's in fixed hours, so like a teacher, like a health professional in retail, in any customer facing role, they don't have the option to, you know, come into work 3 hours late or take an hour off in the middle of the day.
So Senator, I don't wish to be in any way offensive or clumsy in my language, but say, for instance, someone did sadly suffer an early miscarriage, which might require a hospital stay or a hospital appointment in the days following. Presumably, though, if they went to their GP, the GP would say, right, OK, well, I'm going to sign you off sick work for, you know, 14 days or whatever might be required. What would this amendment to the Act provide beyond that, if you know what I mean? Because I would presume most GPs would be favourable to that.
Yeah, so the Act, our legislation provides for 20 days leave for those experiencing an early miscarriage. And that's, I suppose, pregnancy loss up to 24 weeks, because after 24 weeks, a woman's entitled to maternity leave, because then it's classified as a stillborn. And those going through fertility treatment, they're eligible for up to 10 days leave. And I think it's important, particularly for listeners to understand, those who don't know much about fertility treatment, that it's not a once-off procedure. There's a series of tests and scans, and you don't get to choose the dates, because it's your body determines the dates.
But just back to my point about the GP sort of issuing you with a sick note, what entitlement would you have under this new change to the Act that you currently don't have? Sorry, just so I'm clear.
So it would be 10 days for those going through fertility treatment and 20 days for those who have miscarriage leave. At the moment, there is an entitlement to, well, as of January now, 5 days sick leave, a statutory sick leave. And I suppose we believe...
Okay, I understand. That extends it from 5 to 20 in these cases. Yeah, okay, you understand.
And I think it's important, Greg, to also convey to listeners that, you know, many women in particular feel very strongly that this isn't an illness, and in particular for the times that they are actually ill, that sick leave should be available for that.
Yeah.
But this is something very different. And I think as well, there's also a conversation now about from employers, well, God, is this going to add to more leave? Well, you know, in the general scheme of things, there is over 2 million people at work. I think the numbers that this is going to affect in by and large, it's going to be small.
And each woman will make her own choice. Yeah, each woman will make her own choice and will react differently. And some might need that space. Others might benefit by returning to work earlier. It's up to them. So I don't think all of those that sadly suffer an earlier miscarriage are going to do this or going to avail of this. They might not.
You're absolutely right. And it's a deeply personal situation and people react very differently. And of course, there's a big difference from somebody maybe miscarrying at 6 weeks to somebody who's experienced, you know, recurring miscarriages or miscarriage much later on. And I suppose really part of our legislation is also opening up that workplace conversation about early miscarriage and fertility treatment, because one of the other big things that comes back to us time and time again is that women feel they can't talk about it in the workplace because it's going to affect their promotional prospects, it's going to affect, you know, how they're viewed with regards to their work ethic, and we need to move on from that. We need to move, you know, we need to be better and bigger than that and recognise that it does happen, women. It doesn't happen every day of the week, of course, but when it does happen, and very sadly when it does happen, that workplace leave arrangements are in place.
Because we are in this situation that I think the majority or most, or I hate to judge people, won't divulge or choose not to divulge they're pregnant often till after 3 months. And that is because obviously the first trimester is a difficult time, but we as a society have a view or individuals have a view that you would have to keep the miscarriage a secret, or I don't know what the motivation of it, but I think it talks to why, you know, people might find it difficult to talk to, and that's up to the individual. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's kind of interesting that it is I don't know if it's a taboo or that it's incredibly personal, but we choose to generally speaking, I think, keep it quiet for the first 3 months.
Yeah, and I think that's probably something more in keeping in Ireland than perhaps in other countries.
Okay.
And I suppose there is that whole thing that once women get past the first trimester, that there is a greater chance of viability.
Yes,
then.
Of course, yeah.
As somebody who's gone through 3 pregnancies myself, I remember well the anxieties of the first 12 weeks.
I've been through a few myself, but not quite in the way you have. And I share your, not at the same level, I'm sure, but I have a full understanding of that.
And that's it. But I think the thing is as well that not every woman experiencing a miscarriage, as we said there, is going to go through the same thing. So some people will need to go to hospital.
Yeah.
Some people will, you know, be able to be managed at home. Some people don't even go to the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, we do need to recognise the huge range of experiences, and particularly as well for fertility
and it
treatment.
It can be, I mean, even like just the loss in itself, but even the process. It can be incredibly distressing, dependent on how the pregnancy ends and how the body deals with it, or if there's medical intervention. It can be incredibly, incredibly difficult. But just one final question. Obviously, we have the new laws as it relates to leave for domestic abuse. And we have this. Now, that's for men and women, I presume, as well. And this as well. This sounds incredibly heartless, cruel question. But do the government need to support business? Because it is, you know, when you have two different reasons as to why people may be out of the workplace, you know, when you add it up, even in small numbers, it can put quite a bit of pressure on businesses that may already be struggling. Do the government need to pick up some of the slack in this area rather than legislating for something that a business has to pick up the cost of? And it sounds an awful question to ask, but I hope you understand the motivation.
No, of course. And it's a valid question because we get asked this the whole time. I think the first thing to say is that we have more than 2 million people at work at the moment. So the amount of people who will require this leave, you know, whether it's domestic violence leave or whether it's fertility leave or miscarriage leave, you know, they're small numbers in the general scheme of things. I think the second thing to say is that the only leave that we absolutely know workers will take every year is annual leave. Every other leave, whether it's sick leave or domestic violence leave or all the other leaves, there for the, you know, the if they need it. It's not when they need it. And I think that is really important in the conversation. And with regards to workplace supports, well, the government has already instigated a cost of business support scheme that's going to commence in January, which is a rates rebate to every rateable business in the country. And I suppose we would have questions about how targeted that is, because I certainly know from talking to businesses here in Dublin, and indeed I know plenty of businesses in Donegal, that there is, you know, that of course some are struggling and some are flying. So I think, you know, there is support from government, particularly because there's going to be minimum wage increases, and rightly so, because the cost of living increased from January, but it's not very targeted. Yeah. And the last thing I will say, Greg, and it's just really important, just particularly to your listeners in Donegal, like on that fertility leave piece, and I know women from the counties, you know, I spend lots of time in the county, like the ordeal that they have to go through to go to Belfast or to come to Dublin, further scans, further like, you know, it is enormous. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I think particularly for those of us outside of Dublin, that leave is really, really important in ensuring that those women and couples are accommodated within their workplaces.
And of course, and we also have to be careful that we can ask clever questions or questions that seem to expose a flaw, but it might not actually be reflective of business, because many of businesses now are run by women, have women in positions of management, and there might be very little resistance to this altogether. Okay, so as I say, it's an interesting question. It has to be teased out, but maybe it's not that big an issue. All right then, Senator Marie Sherlock, thanks for your time as always. Have a lovely day. Take care
of
yourself.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Bye-bye. Her private member's bill going through the final stage in the Senate today, amending the Organisation of Working Time Act. Okay, quick break, then our next guest joins us in just over 2 minutes. All right, so let's say good morning now to Charles. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Craig.
How are you keeping? And, well, I hope you're good. Now, you are talking about flags and foreign flags. What are your concerns or what are your questions?
Well, under the Constitution, I do believe I could be corrected on this. It is illegal to fly foreign state flags in public-owned buildings.
Right. I thought there were rules that they certainly couldn't fly above the tricolour, but I haven't heard tell previously that you couldn't fly other countries' flags on buildings. But I don't know enough about it. Why has this come to your to the forefront
of
your mind?
Well, I was just listening to your news article this morning at 9 o'clock about the Palestinian flag to be flown in the council offices.
Mm-hmm.
And they're state-owned.
And you believe it shouldn't?
I believe it shouldn't. We shouldn't be flying any other flag but our own in state-owned buildings.
Uh-huh. And is it specific to that?
Well, specific to anything, any complex or anything like that. The Irish flag is the only flag allowed other than the presidential flag or a state visit by another country.
Yeah. Well, I as I say, I don't know enough about this, but I would. There is rules and regulations.
Well, I think they should read the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And people seem to have ignored lately, you know, so...
Well, just reading through flagpoles.ie and other sources, they say the only reference I can see to other nations' flags, it says, when flying the Ireland flag with other national flags, the Ireland flag can be at the same height but must be on the very left-hand side as you approach. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it should actually be above the flags. An Ireland flag should be on a taller flagpole when used with other flags. So there is, you know, provision for the flying of other flags. I don't see anything that doesn't allow it, Charles.
Well, that's that's when I was made to believe at school, when we were taught it at school years ago. I don't think it's ever been taught at school since.
Is your particular issue with the Palestinian flag and what that means politically?
Even the Israeli flag or any other flag.
Okay.
It's not just the Palestinian.
But in your text, you referenced our connections or an individual's connections with Israel. What was the significance of that?
Well, an Irishman became the president of Israel way back, he died in 97, Hitzog is his surname, mm-hmm. and his father was the chief rabbi of Ireland at the time.
Okay, right. You see, I suppose...
He was actually born in Belfast but raised in Dublin.
I suppose we set a precedent, didn't we, in that long before this, but more recently, the Ukrainian flag flies high.
Well, it shouldn't.
So you
because we're not neutral if we're not neutral if we do that.
Yeah. So you believe it questions our
neutrality? Yes, it does.
Okay. Our political. Okay. Well, what do you think of the government?
Well, we were always fully political.
Yeah.
And Melbourne neutral. I don't know why this has come alight lately. They say that we're only. Well, to neutral,
but we're always fully neutral.
Yeah,
what do you think about that? Because it does seem to be that is what we are now.
They're kicking the teeth, actually, to the Irish people.
Yeah. Okay. Right, Charles, whether it's illegal or not, you believe it shouldn't be happening anyway.
It shouldn't be. Well, that's what we were taught when I was younger at school.
Okay.
That only flag is allowed to fly was the state flag or the presidential flag when the president was in situ.
All right. Okay. Know? Charles, thanks for your points. Well made. Whether people agree or not, 086 60 25,000. Stephen is with us now. And Stephen, I read an article from the papers a little earlier on. A Fine Gael TD is suggesting that those found involved in riotous behaviour, if they're on social welfare payments, they should have those payments cut and face stiffer prison sentences. What's your view on that?
Good morning, Greg. No, I agree with anyone proposing that anyone involved in rioting or damaging their property or especially attacking guards or especially medical staff. These people, in my opinion, I think are only out doing their job and they shouldn't be. They should be a greater deterrent for people as having maybe dole cut or some form of payment.
Yeah, because Stephen, we've often talked about this over the years, long before all the conversation of left or right and all this kind of stuff. People for years, as long as I've been sitting in chairs like this, Stephen, have been upset that people involved in criminality, particularly re-offenders, continue to get free legal aid. And a lot of people had texted in the past and said, all right, but at the very least, claw back some of that money from the state from, say, for instance, they've made the suggestion in the past, social welfare payments. So it's not a new conversation, this, I don't think, Stephen. It's, you know, we've been talking about this for years.
Not, no, but it just prompted me to give you a buzz today. Yeah. Like, and maybe people, and like, you could, people would get into trouble once or twice, maybe, but people with 20, 50 or more convictions, I think maybe propose like something like a sliding scale that the more you offend, the less you get.
Yeah, because the punishment of prison and the sort of revolving door of prison, that's not working as a deterrent, Stephen. So maybe hitting people in the pocket might.
It might. It's just a proposal or it's just an idea like to put to some of the people that understand us a lot more than I do, like, or a lot better.
Well, listen, you're a citizen and your view is important as anyone's, and you believe that anyone involved in rioting, attacking guards or medical staff should have to pay and should not get legal aid, or at least maybe have a clawback on that legal aid.
Have a clawback or have a sliding scale that the more you offend, the less you get, or some system. I just don't know, but like you're entitled to less legal aid the more you offend, or because if you are hit in the pocket, it's like speeding, it's like anything. The more you pay, you'll take more notice of.
Okay.
Take more notice of re-offending.
I think that's what seems to change our behaviour, the money side of it. All right, Stephen, listen, thank you so much for your views. I appreciate it. Further reaction to the documentary that was broadcast focusing on loss from suicide in the traveller community. Fair play to Patrick's parents. I've the utmost respect for them. The programme brought tears to my eyes. I've suffered racism by an Irishman who then got the backing of other cowboys when I challenged them. They belong to a big voluntary organisation. I brought it to the CEO of the organisation. They closed ranks on me. I'd have took it further, but I was grieving the loss of my youngest sister. The only thing is none of them can look me in the eye when they see me. To think I went there for support, have witnessed to it all, just didn't have the finances to take them to court. Hi, Greg. Just regarding the Dublin riot, why wasn't water cannons not deployed quicker? Do Gardaí believe I do believe Gotti could have requested these that evening. Well, they couldn't really because we don't have any. And you point that out as I read on in your text. They had to come down from Northern Ireland. But is anyone in the Gardaí trained to actually use water cannons? I presume there's quite rigorous training that is required on how they are used. But again, you're not going to get that information. But reading on, they came from Northern Ireland, which is not that far away. In my honest opinion, I believe Garda lives were put under threat. A baton is no good when outnumbered by five people. Should the army be deployed? Possibly. They're trained in public order, but unfortunately, we take too soft an approach. If this was France, believe they would have tackled harder. Anyone caught, they say, needs prison time. All right, quite a lot of you actually reacting as well to the conversation about different commentators in different sports. Interesting views on commentators of sports games, says this emailer. I do believe it's only a question of what you're used to, habit of mind, if you like. I'm a Swede, and here we very often have both male and female commentators. In fact, a lot of my favourites are women. Some of them used to be ex-players, but some are journalists by trade, not ex-athletes. Competence is very important, gives insight. Passion and a pleasant voice to listen to. Gender is not. Now, keep in mind, I live in Sweden, and here our priest is a woman, and her wife is also a woman, and happens to be a priest herself too. And one of our previous archbishops was a woman too, Antje Jackelén. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Again, I think it all should come down to competence, not gender. Andres, thank you very much indeed. He goes on to say, I find Gary Neville as a commentator utterly insufferable. He's massively annoying at every level. I could be slightly biased here, being an Arsenal fan. Okay, I just don't watch the Sky coverage because it seems there's only a handful of teams in there, like, you know, Liverpool, Manchester United, and concerned about that. I have an ad break to take, Caroline, in a second, in any case. Greg, sorry to keep harping on about it, but another six pathway cycleways approved in Donegal, and another year passes waiting on the Carrigart to Downing's Path, first proposed in 2011. It's a dangerous stretch of road that I happen to use now more than I had in the past. I don't understand it. Some of it's there. It needs to be all there, particularly for the next summer, you'd imagine, because a lot of people run, walk, cycle, traverse between the two. There's new businesses opening Carrigart. Maybe there'll be more traffic between the two areas. I don't know. There's a million and one reasons as to why that cycleway pathway should progress between Carrigart and Downing's. If anyone has an update as to what the holdup is or when work will actually begin, please let us know. I'm all for equality for men and women. However, have you noticed that every single sporting event is anchored and presided over by a woman? Even the more traditional men's sports, such as golf and rugby, are presented by women. Where is the equality? It's time men started a campaign for equality in the workplace. All right, okay. But I mean, traditionally, snooker has been presented by women for years. I don't watch the build up or the analysis, so I can't really comment. I just watch the games, to be honest with you. So I don't really know the ins and outs of whether I would be annoyed or not, depending on who it is. I know people have strong opinions on commentators, regardless of their gender. And I think Andres pointed that out, that often it's just really down to the ability and the authenticity and so on. Now, I'm joined in studio by Lorna McLaughlin from the Henry Girls. Lorna, lovely to have you in with us again.
I'm delighted to be here.
And we're also in the company of Fadl Mustafa, presenter of the night we're going to be talking of.
Yes.
Fadl, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Greg.
You are a Palestinian and living in Donegal. And just a reflection from you, if you don't mind, on the current events that's affecting your country, your region, your people.
I don't know where to start, to be honest, Greg. Just to sort of summarize it, us Palestinians people are sick and tired of being dehumanized, occupied, killed, massacred, settled, land stolen from them, all the negative aspects that you could actually think about. We're just sick and tired. But we do have the right to resist the occupation that's been forced on us. A lot of people either agree or disagree with the form of resistance. Under every occupation, there has been resistance through history. I personally don't agree with violent resistance. I would prefer more peaceful resistance. And I think this occasion that the Henry Girls have organized in Kuldaf on the 1st of December is a great way and a great example of how we can use the art as a form of resistance.
What has your reaction been to sort of the passive nature, I think, of the international community, the reaction to the level of civilian death, you know, 6,000 children, you know, many, many thousands of women. And I think sometimes as humans, you know, all the focus now is about the release of hostages, be they those held by Israel as prisoners or Hamas. And I think it's like we want to see the light in that, and it's just everywhere, blanket coverage of a number of people, incredibly important people. But the amount of people that have been obliterated, wiped from the face of the earth, are many multiples of that, many multiples of that, and yet it gets very little attention. Is that a human condition, or is it just suits the narrative?
It's dehumanizing.
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, it's intentional?
I do believe. I think it's racist, it's discriminatory that the Palestinian life is devalued compared to any other life. And it's not surprising that it's coming from the West and the US that Palestinians are looked upon differently because of the nature of their religion, their ethnicity, of their skin color, of their background, of their nationality. All through the years, as Palestinians, we've been labeled as violent and terrorists. And to be honest, you know, we're sick as Palestinians. We're sick and tired of the hypocrisy of the Western world. We've seen tears of U.S. and European politicians live on TV when they talk about any other nationality that they relate to as a white person or a white child. But then when it comes to a Palestinian child who's non-white, then it's a complete different story.
There is that, but I think also that moral compass can also be tilted if there's financial interest in a particular area as well. I don't think it's exclusive to skin color. How dare I even say that sitting here as someone? But
of course, Greg. I mean, finances and money is always the motive behind every single war, I believe, in my opinion. But to devalue human life on making money, there's already now talk about oil fields off the coast of Gaza that Israel and America want to do business with. Now, is that really enough to devalue human life and kill over 16,000 innocent civilians for that? It's hypocritical.
I just genuinely find it impossible to get my head around to the lack of reaction or emotion, and not to single out any, but particularly the children. You know what I mean? That you can have 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 children gone, and it's just a line. It's a line in a script. It's not. You know what I mean? There's no analysis or there's no evaluation or whatever it might be. It's simply, you know, 14,000, and then dismiss it. We'll say those were Hamas figures. And you know what I'm on about? I just don't understand where we got to the point whereby the world. Do you remember the? We'll get on to the concert in a second, but do you remember the reaction to the and the one Syrian child? Do you remember he was wearing a red T-shirt?
Yes.
And he was on a beach?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, 6,000 Irish people says, we'll give our spare room to anyone fleeing that awful. Yes. That was one little child. Yes. God rest his soul. Yes. 6,000, 7,000 in multiples of that. And it's seemingly irrelevant. Yes. How? How could you have such a reaction to one tragic death and almost numbness to multiples? It scares me where this world's going, because it's there now, but where's it going to happen next? Could it be Cork?
Exactly.
Could it be? Because the attitude is transferable.
That's the question. Is we become numb to dehumanization? We become numb to the killing and the massacre of innocent children and innocent civilians. We're not talking about only children there, Greg. There has been families, whole families, wiped out from the register in Gaza. And we're talking, just to come back to a point that you made there about the figures, that they're Hamas figures. Well, I apologize if we miscounted maybe 100 or 200 here or there, but the figures still are the same.
And just personally speaking, I find it equally horrific what happened on October 7th as well, in that there were more innocents that were destroyed and killed in that regard. But an eye for an eye, where does that leave us? Mm-hmm. We are speaking in the context of, and Lorna, apologies, I just want to have the opportunity of speaking to Fadlan yourself on those issues, just to tease that out, because I don't want to forget that as well, as if we just moved straight to this and not read the reason why we're here to begin with.
Because there's absolutely no reason to apologise, because that's exactly why Fadlan is here. And just to say, as a family, you know, we have been very aware. Our sister dated a Palestinian for 6 years. Back in the 90s, she met him. So we found it really interesting, because he said he was from Israel, but he called himself Palestinian. So from that, from an early point in our lives, we kind of understood, you know, because not everybody does completely understand the situation. It's, you know, we've enough going on in our own lives sometimes to kind of think, how can we understand politics all around the world? But we particularly understand this situation, so we're very happy to be putting on this night in support of Palestinian people. And actually today is, what is it, Fadl?
Today is the United Nations International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a recognised day within the United Nations, and started back in 1977. And it's may I say something, that it's actually positive and negative at the same time. As I was telling Lorna, that we actually need a day to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. But the question is, why is there a day that stands with solidarity with the Palestinian people? That's the question that needs to be asked.
Why is it not 365 days a year, exactly. I presume, or why is it required? Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the concert's on Friday night. Fadl is the presenter on the night.
Yes.
And funds raised on the night are for medical aid for Palestinians. And you have a fantastic lineup, Lorna.
We have a great lineup. We're very excited about it. It's in the Wee Hall in Kilduff, and it's at 7:30. And there's going to be ourselves, the Henry Girls, and then there's going to be Raina Connolly, who is the BBC Radio 2 Folk Award winner, Singer of the Year. Phenomenal singer, really brilliant. She's going to be there with her family band called Lee Ban, who are from Armagh. Then we're going to have a brilliant band called Gazelle Band, who are flying over from Manchester for the night to be there, as is Raina actually, and they've got a Palestinian oud player in the band. And then we've got Kate O'Callaghan, who's a singer-songwriter from Inishowen, from Carndonagh, with her husband Seamus Devaney, who many people will know. And then there's going to be two top brilliant Donegal fiddlers, Roisin McGorry and Clodagh Warnock. And so they're going to give us some traditional tunes. So it's going to be a really... and we have Elnor Lam and Fiacra Lam, who are... Elnor is a singer and an activist, and her son Fiacra is an activist as well, who actually was on... I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, there was a few Irish people attempted to make it to Gaza. There was a flotilla, and he was part of that flotilla. So it was quite... It was a big news story at the time.
Yeah.
But this is not a one-off concert. This is part of a coalition of artists all around Ireland called Irish Artists for Palestine, and it's a really big movement. Like, and we're really proud to be part of it. There's concerts happening all over Ireland this week. There was a massive concert last night in the Three Arena with Damien Dempsey and the Mary Wallopers, and then there's other concerts going on this week, include the Saw Doctors Monday, Mary Black, Mary Coughlin. So
been a remarkable
so
response,
many artists.
Hasn't it?
It's really
but
amazing.
What a collection of artists you have for Friday night. Just remind us, location, start time.
Okay, so it's in the Wee Hall in Kilduff, 7:30. And if anybody wants to get tickets, they really should get tickets in advance, because there's only about 20 tickets left.
Is that it? So where do they get the tickets? And that's the next question.
Go to our website, thehenrygirls.com.
Okay. And get it quick. There's 20 tickets, do you say?
There's only 20 left.
Right, okay, so get
on. There's a workshop as well on the Saturday at 2 o'clock in the hall. There's going to be a Palestinian music workshop, and then there's going to be a film shown called The Present.
Okay. We're going to come back after 11 o'clock with the track. Talk to me about the track that you have out at the moment.
Okay, so the track is called Not Your Fight, and it's ourselves collaborating with Raina Connolly, who I mentioned, who's also performing at the concert on Friday night. And it's on our new album, which is coming out on the 26th of January. So this is like the second single that we've released. And it's getting a good reaction, so we're really happy that people are enjoying it.
Fantastic stuff. All right. And you're performing Friday as well, are you?
Yes, we are.
Okay, you said that, okay, of course.
Thank you.
Fadl, there's a balance to be struck on Friday night, obviously, because you know it's a very serious issue. There's an awful lot to be said, but there's entertainment there as well. There's Irish entertainment, Palestinian group, Gazelle Band, as you mentioned there. Yeah. So, but it's going to be informative and entertaining, I think, Fadhel.
I hope so, yes, I hope so. But also, not as a competition, not a direct competition. We actually are having an event tonight in the Regional Cultural Centre.
It wasn't Friday night.
No, it's tonight. The idea behind it was because it is the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, and it was organised back in September and planned for back in September. We don't have any tickets, so it's all sold out. It will be a night of culture. It will be a night of history and heritage. Music, poetry, spoken word, songs, and food at the end of it. Palestinian food.
Yeah. What were you doing all this?
Well, I did send you. I did send you an invite last week, Greg, to Highland Radio.
Right. Well,
you're more than welcome to come if you want.
I want it directly to be. Listen, thank you so much.
There's one more seat. You're more than welcome, Greg.
Fadhel Mustafa. Thank you so much for joining us. Lorna McLaughlin from the Henry Girls, always a pleasure to have you
thank you so much.
At Highland Radio. That is tonight, Friday night, by the way. Tonight's sold out. Friday night, there's only 20 tickets left. So get onto the Henry Girls website and secure yours ASAP. I don't think they're going to hang around. So we're going to take a break for the news. We'll come back with that new track. But both of you for now, thank you so very much for joining us.
And thank you so much for having us. You.